welcome today morning in the great city of Atlanta. My name is Steak. That's Drew Butler alongside as we take you through 2 hours, hopefully, of, you know, on the Odyssey app or if you're driving around town or whatever it is, how you get your audio, how you get your audio content. We are here for you and got a lot to get to. And I think hopefully a lot of entertainment, strong opinions, a little bit of comedy, whatever it is that you need to make this kind of a gloomy Thursday morning a little bit better.
Yeah, it seems like the weather is going to be a little wet, a little inconsistent, but leading into the weekend, which should be great. So glad to be in the studio. We got a bunch to talk about. We'll have fun. 2 hours.
Yeah, I was on a golf course yesterday in this. I don't think you heard us yesterday, but it is my to become a better golfer.
Yes, and I have, it's a great mission to have.
I have 10 poles that I have on the times I have to play. Played at the Standard Club yesterday.
It's
in
right
John
down the street from me.
Great time. Beautiful track. Thanks to Scott Marr and folks out there for hosting us. If you haven't been to the Standard Club since they've redone that track, it's an awesome one.
Yeah.
And so we were up there. We were the only people on the golf course.
Wow.
Because it was so lousy in the morning.
Right.
So we're playing the back nine. There was nobody there. It was 3:45 and it was 80 degrees and sunny. But
yeah,
it started so
afternoon.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And they got a great irrigation system, I guess. They spent a ton of money. So I was playing with some dudes, my buddy Bruce Scala, and he's like, you're never going to see this. We're in the middle of spring in Atlanta. We're the only people on this sick golf course because similar, this is what yesterday morning looked like.
Yep.
And was raining. Now, I don't think it's going to turn today like it did yesterday where it got nice, but pretty cool to just have a whole track to yourself, which is what was happening.
No question. And Standard Club now is the home to Mizuno Tour Fitting Facility.
So
I had not
seen
that yet, but it's called the Foundry. All of Mizuno's tour talent and their upcoming talent will be coming to the Standard Club to do full club fittings, get on the computers, get on the TrackMan simulators, and they will build their clubs right there in that new facility at the Standard Club.
Yeah,
Mizuno obviously is based here in Atlanta. They're a North American headquarters, I believe, right?
Okay.
Atlanta, I believe
everybody was talking about, you know, that in the clubhouse, at least it was after, once we were getting off the course, and folks were like, yeah, that Mizuno thing is a real deal. So that's yesterday. I just did V103. That's why I come in here out of breath a little bit. I do V103 every Thursday morning, Atlanta Eats on radio. And they were asking me to do something on meals under $20. Things have gotten so expensive. You know, you almost can't go anywhere.
You really can't. That's a great topic.
So one of the things we were talking about, I brought up, is there's a company. I know you're fascinated by business and marketing and all that. There is a company that nobody saw coming that is the hottest story in the restaurant world, and that is, I think it's Chili's, right?
With the talked about this on air.
Yeah, the Triple Dipper.
Yes, has like revitalized the entire brand.
It's unbelievable. And it's
all organic social media marketing. They go mega viral by these people walking in, trying these new mozzarella sticks, taking videos of it, saying
it's
the
cheesiness,
the cheese pull. And,
right.
You know, there are actual studies as to when those videos go viral, how much revenue it generates for Chili's restaurants across the country. It's unbelievable.
Tens of millions.
Yes.
I can tell you this just by mentioning, you know, I had that viral video from a week and a half ago at that burger place where they sold out Saturday and Sunday completely.
Wow.
It was a whole thing about
Shea Butter
waiting.
Jones, right?
Yeah, Shea Butter Jones. Or anything. But you know, that's a thing now. People want value. Listen, you got a lot of fancy downtowns, and Johns Creek's done a great job, and your area has done great, and kind of the Norcross.
Duluth, Norcross, Alpharetta,
Roswell. Marietta Square now is cooler than it's ever been.
City Springs and Sandy Springs, yeah, man.
At the end of the day, you know, it's hard to take and feed the family. As your girls get older, dude, the amount of drama over, like, who's eating what, where, when is it going to happen? Are we cooking for the week? When do you go out
Hell
to dinner?
Yeah, man.
I mean, it's a whole thing. I know your girls are young, but
it's stressful. I mean, we just did a road trip. We were down at Miramar Beach for Memorial Day weekend, which was awesome. But, you know, down and then back, you hit Chick-fil-A both times. That's $100 down and back.
Well, think about
it. Three girls, me and Jackie.
That's exactly what Chili's.
$50 a pop.
Chili's is now marketing campaign is, do you want to spend the same money and go fast food? Or do you want to have a waitress and drinks and TVs and setting? Because the prices through, you know, a McDonald's or a Chick-fil-A or any of these, and your price point is, you just said it, $100 to feed the family twice.
Right. And I love Chick-fil-A. We'll keep coming back.
Of course, Chick-fil-A does a great job. It is what it is in terms of cost. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. And I'll maybe talk about some of the places on the list. I'll say this. You go to Buford Highway, you're going to find deals.
Right.
You know, and there's always taco deals, by the way. My kids go to Verde. They're $4 tacos. Taqueria del Sol. Places up and down Buford
Highway. What's the
Highway.
Buford Highway Cuban spot? You've done a video from there. It's
Havana.
Awesome. Yeah, place is great.
Yeah, Lee's.
That's like OG Cuban sandwich.
Yes, OG.
Phenomenal.
Place called Lee's Bakery on Buford Highway, the Bon Me sandwich. So you can find them, but you just have to research a little. And cost is,
that's right.
A thing more and more for folks right now. You know, so we're always looking for great value. So we did that. Wanted to tell you about my golf. I want to find out what you've been doing of late. How was everything with you?
Awesome, man. Yeah, we had a phenomenal Memorial Day weekend. Friends of ours, we went down to their condo at Miramar Beach. I'd never been down there. I'm relatively unfamiliar with 30A and Destin. Miramar's right next to Sandestin.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize it, but on Tuesday morning when we're kind of taking our time to make our way back to Atlanta, I see my buddy Josh Brooks on TV. I'm like, oh, he's 100 yards away from me. That's exactly where the SEC spring meetings are happening. Yes.
Where Feinbaum had that ridiculous beach shot behind him, right?
That's the beach.
Yeah, right there at Sandestin. We've done shows there in the past. That whole stretch of 38, and that's way on the other end from, say, Rosemary Beach, an hour in between. But, well, we got a lot to get to over the course. My buddy Eddie Gonzalez, he used to run the Atlanta Open for years, which was our only professional tennis tournament in town. He now is living the life of a semi-retired dude. He's coming in here at 10 o'clock. The toughest thing to do in sports, he's traveling around. That's facing, I guess, a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, getting on skates for the first time, returning a volleyball serve from
I can't wait to talk to him because I feel like this is, you know, you sitting around the table with your boys. You might have had a couple of too many pops, and you're like, would you get in the ring with prime Mike Tyson?
Right.
For $10 million.
Well, I've done the conversation. Could I last 30 seconds in a ring with Tyson?
No.
Right.
No way.
And they're like, dude, that's the stupidest question. I said, what if I literally run away from him?
Yeah.
Like I'm running.
No.
If I'm just, my goal is to last 30 seconds, but I'm running. But again, if think about the MMA guys. One of their kicks to your leg or shin.
Yeah. Snap it in half. Snap. Your femur in half.
So your body, their bodies are just trained to handle a
without
kick like that?
Question, dude. If Conor, you know, prime Conor McGregor or whoever.
Or any of these guys.
If they did a roundhouse kick to your shin, that thing would snap like a twig in the woods.
And if they kicked us in the ribs.
You would go down so hard,
right.
Your ribs would be broken. You'd probably be gasping for air thinking you're going to die.
Yeah.
Your lung would be punctured.
Right. So that's one of those questions. You're right. So it's like, you sit and have this debate probably over, like, what's the hardest thing in sports to do?
You asked me that, and I was like, I don't know, ride a horse in the Kentucky Derby? I'd have no idea what I'm doing.
So he's going to come in and talk about that. His son also is playing minor league baseball. He tells the trials and tribulations. Played at Tech for Danny Hall. He's coming in later, but let's do our 9 at 9 as well. All right, the Braves, I'm not going to say a much-needed night off. I think they wanted to get back out there. Middle of a horrible stretch, one of their worst stretches of the year, especially when they needed it the least. You got over 500. That didn't last long, and now you are struggling. The Phillies, you rained out yesterday. Two games today.
Yeah, doubleheader today. 105 is the first pitch of the first game. A.J. Smith-Shawver on the mound for the Braves against Christopher Sanchez for the Phillies. And then they run it back. 6:45 p.m., Chris Sale on the mound for Atlanta. Zach Wheeler on the mound for Philadelphia. And as you said, Steak, the Braves right now just cannot find any momentum. They're three games under 500. They're 25-28 on a two-game losing streak. They got to find some sort of consistency because this is just not inspiring baseball.
Yeah, they got to find a way to get at least one today. Two would be
right,
just what the doctor ordered, but that Chris Sale, Zach Wheeler matchup, very intriguing in the nightcap tonight, 6:45. Meanwhile, speaking about a nightcap, Atlanta United last night playing Orlando City FC. Red cards, goals everywhere. Conte is going crazy. They win another home game. That's back-to-back. They score in the fifth minute of extra time. That was Jamal Tiare after scoring the 83rd minute when they're down 2-1. A big win for Atlanta United.
Yeah, scoring that go-ahead goal in the fifth minute of extra time. Just an awesome scene down at Mercedes-Benz. And Sleets' goal in the 83rd minute, absolutely phenomenal. He ripped one from the top of the penalty box, hit the crossbar, hit the upright, and ended up in the goal. So a huge win for Atlanta United, 3-2 over rival Orlando City SC.
Yeah, it looked like a great scene. And we needed those two dubs, which is exactly what you got. And goal scoring in the building, something Atlanta United fans had to be thrilled with back-to-back games. Meanwhile, Anthony Edwards, local product, him and the T-Wolves went down, and let's just say in less than exemplary fashion, absolutely blown out of the gym, one of the worst basketball games you're ever going to see. Oklahoma City was up by 11 within 4 minutes of that game, and they cruise. If you ever wondered where the NBA title is headed, you better think OKC. 124-94. They win by 30. They wait for the Pacer Nick champion, but boy, will they be a heavy favorite in the finals.
Yeah, they absolutely will. Oklahoma City is a wagon right now. Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals is tonight, 8 p.m. tip-off on TNT. Pacers at the New York Knicks. This one's in Madison Square Garden.
Your first
Knicks are 4.5-point favorites.
What's your first gut in betting that game?
I think the Knicks get one at home.
Indiana's a better team, and they're getting 4.5, but are they really going to go 0-3 on their home building, the Knicks?
I know.
So
that's where my head goes.
Okay. Yeah. I hate giving up that many points, but that's just a little bit of our 9-9. When we come back, we will hear from Anthony Edwards. Listen, winning a title ain't easy, and are the T-Wolves even close after watching what happened to them last night? We'll hear from the local Georgia Star. Also, Mike Vrabel and the Patriots, not a good day for them. If you haven't heard or seen the viral video with Stephon Diggs, what do you do as a boss when it's very clear your newest star player is up to shenanigans? It's the definition of what Mike Bell would call shenanigans. That's what Stephon Diggs is up to. We'll get to that and lots more. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This is the Steakhouse on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Drew Butler and Steak Shapiro in the fold on a Thursday morning. A gloomy and wet Thursday morning here in the city of Atlanta, but things should brighten up, hopefully, around 1 o'clock when the Braves play their first of a doubleheader up in Philadelphia against the Phillies. A.J. Smith-Shawver will be on the mound in the first game. Chris Sale on the mound in the second game, which is scheduled for 6:45. So the Braves got rained out yesterday. They're making it up today. Doubleheader action starts at 1:05 up in Philly. Some other news that's been going on. A place where I was just at over the weekend, Steak, Miramar Beach, Florida. It's where the SEC spring meetings have been taking place. And as the SEC does, they just continue to make these events bigger and bolder and more out in the open. It kind of reminds me of what the NFL has done with their 12-month schedule of things that fans can get involved with.
Cycle of news, release of the schedule, release of our SEC meetings, rule changes. Then, of course, in the Hoover, Alabama for years, which happens when you bring all the captains and everybody to town.
Yeah, so, and media days will be in Atlanta this summer, which should be a lot of fun. But I just find it so funny as you get on social media and you see the reactions to the news bits that break from the SEC spring meetings of college football fans, probably not SEC fans, complaining about what these coaches and these athletic directors are saying and complaining about what Greg Sankey is saying, to which I say, these people don't give a rip about the Big Ten or the Big 12 or the ACC. All they care about is the Southeastern Conference, and they're not going to do or say or talk about anything that doesn't have to do with the SEC when they're literally on the beach with SEC banners flying behind them.
Yeah, it's no different than a brand that has a convention, right, in Vegas or somewhere else, and they bring all their top leaders together. They're not talking about their competitor. They're talking about what went right this year. How do we continue to stay on top? When you talk about our company here in Coca-Cola, I kind of think like Coke and the SEC. Did you see now, I don't even give the name of the other soda company. First time ever, they're fourth overall.
Is that right?
That all the top brands in the soda business are Coke-owned brands.
Wow, I did not know that.
And Dr. Pepper is on fire. Sprite, for the first time, has knocked out that other soda. They're in the three spot. Mm. Coke in the one spot.
Wow.
So a domination of a local company, SEC-like. We'll talk more about the SEC and Greg Sankey. Why maybe all the bravado is not good for college football. That's coming up in a little bit. I did want to touch on, and I don't know if you have that cut ready to go, but the situation, it's not about New England as much as a head coach and the situation he's been put in. The Patriots go and sign Stephon Diggs for a 3-year, which I think was a lot of money for a guy that I don't know that he's still a dominant wide receiver. Certainly he's had a checkered kind of scenario with multiple teams of late, right?
Yes.
And he's their big wide receiver signing. They had the worst group of wide receivers.
Yeah, they needed him. You know, that was just a perfect situation for him to make a boatload of money because the Pats needed wide receiver help in any way, shape, or
form. I've never seen a worse group of wide receivers in my life or worst missing on picks worse. They took Javon Polk of Washington.
Jaden Polk.
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Jaden Polk, right? They took him over Ladd McConkey. Over Ladd McConkey, not to mention the other stiffs they have in that group. But anyway, so Stephon Diggs gets that big deal from New England for 3 years to help out with Drake May, and that's just part of how they're rebuilding New England. Meanwhile, they're in OTAs that Stephon Diggs is not at. But where he was a part of a viral video that surfaced that shows Stephon Diggs, who supposedly is now dating Cardi B.
I think that is accurate.
Yeah, they were at the Knick game together recently. He is on a boat where he opens up this little mini case and a young lady grabs a bag with a pink substance in it and he says, don't finish it all. Now,
You need to set the stage a little bit better, though. Young ladies, and they are fiending over what he has available to them.
There's like four girls in bikinis. Yeah. It's Stephon Diggs. There's music playing, and there's a substance that he hands them and says, don't finish this. Most folks seem to conjecture that it's a form of what's called pink cocaine, which is recently a combination of...
It said like ketamine, cocaine, methamphetamines.
Yeah, like ecstasy, like
right.
Something.
MDMA.
So I had heard from about, you know, trying to understand what young people are up to, that on the islands now this has become something, this pink coke or whatever it is. It certainly looks like it, and it's certainly an awkward situation for Mike Vrabel, the new head coach of the New England Patriots, instead of talking about his revamped offense and the incredible offseason for New England, he is having to talk about this.
Well, it's something that we're aware of, and obviously we want to make great decisions on and off the field. And we're hoping that with our time here on the field today, and that when we don't have a script and we're on the call-up periods, that we're making great decisions. And so the message will be the same for all our players, that we're trying to make great decisions. And any conversations that I've had with Stephon will remain between him and I and the club.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all Mike Vrabel can say. We hope our players make good decisions. I'm sure Coach Vrabel and maybe the wide receivers coach for the New England Patriots reached out to Stephon Diggs personally and said, please make good decisions.
So I had heard this name tossed around called Tusi, T-U-S-I, which sounds like it has kind of an island name, which is where I guess this is surfaced more. Or pink cocaine, typically does not contain cocaine, ketamine, MDMA, sometimes caffeine or something along those lines. It's really the last thing you want to see from a leader on your team and a video surface where it appears that there's not a care in the world.
And he's not with his team. The team is in OTAs and he is not there.
What is legitimately, and I put it out to group, what's the responsibility of Mike Vrabel here?
That's it. That's the only responsibility he has, unfortunately, because in the world of the NFL, when you pay a high-profile superstar $68 million to come be your wide receiver one, it's probably expected just based on, and this is an assumption of mine, based on what he has done in seasons past, that he's not going to be at OTAs. That's probably expected. Hey, I'll be at voluntary minicamp, or excuse me, mandatory minicamp.
I don't do OTAs.
And then I'll be in tip-top shape when training camp starts, and you'll expect what you paid me to do when the season starts.
Many professions, if you are head of sales for an organization or a top salesperson, if you're Paul Pierce and you're on TV, like, what did he lose his job for? Smoking a bunch of weed on a video viral with women, right?
Right, yes.
Isn't that what he lost his gig for? you know, there's a lot of jobs where if something surfaced on Instagram or you had a friend post something and somebody within your organization was like, hey, boss, have you seen this? Jerry looks like he was getting after it on the islands over the weekend or whatever.
Well, look, if he's the top salesperson in his company, I'm sure the boss is a little bit more lenient with him. And that's why I've always said on this show a million times over and over, the NFL is the ultimate meritocracy. Coaches and owners will put up with whatever they have to put up with as long as Stephon Diggs produces. And if he produces and he scores 4 touchdowns in the first 3 weeks, nobody's going to be talking about this.
Bob Kraft owns the New England Patriots. He made a $69 million commitment to fix his wide receiver position, a somewhat embattled wide receiver that Buffalo thought was expendable because of kind of some of the nonsense.
Right.
Arguably George Pickens' ass, maybe not as bad, right? You're paying that much money. Your player does not show up at OTAs, and now the hottest video yesterday on the market, enough that my daughter came to me and goes, have you seen this video? And just wants to ask me about this Tootsie substance or what do you do here? And then Vrabel's answering questions.
It's just a gigantic distraction. And it's unfortunate because Vrabel has to say, we're trying to make sure that we don't make mistakes on the field.
Yes.
We also want to make sure that we don't make mistakes off the field.
Can you imagine, though, how is too light a word for the guy that is paying that number, that is paying that salary, right, to have to it's a little bit – I want to say it. I mean – the owners deal with a lot. Arthur Blank, right. God knows he's dealt with a lot. This nonsense in the draft and fine with Shador, nonsense with his quarterback saying something out of line that next thing you know you lose a draft pick, things
correct.
Like that. But here you are. I don't know. Like you said, if he was a third receiver on the team, he's cut, right? Is there any doubt?
Probably so.
Third or fourth receiver.
Yeah, rookie, you're done.
Who's the famous wide receiver coach for years here in Atlanta? Not here
Terry
anymore.
Rubisky?
Yeah, Terry Rubisky, if it was his fourth receiver or third receiver. Well, he would call the guy up and go, are you out of your effing mind?
Yeah.
Get your ass back to Atlanta, and you're going to get punished when I see you.
Correct.
And he would hold it again. But again, all that matters there in New England now is proving you can win without Bill Belichick and proving that you've done everything right. And people are saying the best offseason they've ever had in the history of the team and that you're a possible playoff team. You're not that with Stephon Diggs. But, man, I don't know what jobs. Would Mike Conte, I can tell you this, Mike Conte and Odyssey and everybody else, there was a viral video posted that looked like that. Not a lot of people would have a gig at all, right? So
Stephon Diggs has to show awareness too, because whoever was taking that video was standing right in front of him, clearly with the phone out, taping him, recording him.
Dude,
it wasn't like he was doing it in a selfie mode, but he's like looking at the camera, which was a little bit.
Have you seen the video, Bo? I mean, he just opens that case up without a care in the world.
It's almost like he aims it. It's almost like he aims it at the camera lens. Yeah.
I would argue that if he was doing some of that substance,
he probably wouldn't have had that awareness.
Yeah, just didn't. I'm having a great time. Maybe you're filming. You know, one of the things that drugs and alcohol could do to you is you don't always put one, two, and two together.
Correct.
Like, you don't know. Like, I'm having fun right now. I'm not thinking about back home the video that's going to post and Mike Vrabel sitting in miserable weather up there in Boston in May getting asked a question about me on a boat with 5 chicks.
And I can assure you, based on that, he was definitely not thinking about any of that.
No, he wasn't.
He was having a great time.
So, just, you know, man, it is real life because there's consequences to everything you do. One thing I always tell my kids, whatever you choose, whatever behavior, there will be consequences on the other
end. Actions have consequences.
And positive and negative.
Yeah, of course.
Treat people the right way. You do the right thing enough times, I can hopefully raise my hand. When you get fired, people want to rehire you if you treat people well. I know a lot of people in this business have not gotten a job again. You know why? How they treated people along the way.
Yep.
So that's part of it. When we come back, why Greg Sankey is turning into a full-fledged college football villain. Also, Steve Sarkisian speaks, and Drew Butler has some thoughts. Sports Radio 929 The Game. .939 Sports Radio 929 The Game. Steak Shapiro and Drew Butler on a Thursday morning.
We were just talking about OTAs and how Stephon Diggs is not at OTAs. Did you see what Joy Taylor did yesterday on Speak FS1?
Joy Taylor is the one who is embroiled in the controversy
Correct.
Of sleeping with her boss who got fired. He lost the gig, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't remember the details accurately enough.
A lot of scandal surrounding her and her tenure at FS1.
Did you see what happened to her yesterday?
No.
She goes on a rant on her show, Speak, saying, why on earth is Aaron Rodgers not at OTAs with the Steelers?
Oh, no.
How disrespectful.
Oh, my God.
He doesn't even know anybody in the building.
Oh, my God.
He's not respecting the brand of the Steelers.
And there's no producer that saved her right there? Damn.
And just a newsflash for all of our listeners, Aaron Rodgers is not on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And she goes on this tirade about how it's unacceptable that he is not at OTAs.
Oh my God.
With the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I can't believe her co-hosts didn't correct her on the spot.
I'm reading the headlines. Joy Taylor slammed for bizarre Aaron Rodgers rant. Next one. Am I missing something? Joy Taylor bizarrely rants at Aaron Rodgers for missing OTAs, leaving Steeler fans puzzled.
It's like, so weird.
You know, that's a bad moment. That's a horrendous moment. And listen, I've gotten things wrong. I don't know ever to that level.
Where you like, going on a tirade?
Like, I got a whole soliloquy here. Let me do this thing. Like, let me tell you something right now.
Yeah.
The reason we traded Kirk Cousins and the reason he's not in our building is because we're going to set a standard here and go get and, like, do 2 minutes. Steak, they didn't trade. What? What? Is this on? Like, that's a bad moment. Yeah. Especially because it wasn't just like, I think Aaron Rodgers would be great with the Steelers now. It's happened. That's fine. Dude, it's not there yet. Oh, my bad. No, to have a whole, like, put it in your show rundown, like, I'm going to do a whole thing on it.
And it kind of piggybacks on, obviously, what she's been embroiled in and her legitimacy.
Lack of credibility.
Yes.
Lack of credibility.
Correct.
Kind of like the Brett Favre horrendous documentary when Jen Sturger, who was like, you know, the hot girl at the Florida State game that Brent Musburger mentioned. Next thing you know, she's a sideline reporter. Nobody really understood why. And from a credibility standpoint, right? It's like, does this girl have any credibility? You haven't seen it, right?
No, you talked me out of it.
Has you had anybody else tell you that documentary?
I think so many
garbage.
People listen to the Steakhouse that they heard your rant and they were like, I'm not going to watch
this. The worst moment I have ever seen for an on-air personality in terms of, I mean, maybe it's a stretch, but short of completely slandering somebody illegally on the air or something, is Michelle Beadle is hired by Mike Greenberg to co-host Get Up. So in the early days of Get Up, Greeny says, I'm done with Mike and Mike. It's an unceremoniously end of that show. Golic was pissed. Greenberg doesn't care. Knowing him a little bit, he really is out for Mike Greenberg at all times. So he's got that show that ESPN invested a bunch in, right?
Whole new studio right there in the Seaport.
Yes, and they're going to try to put Michelle Beadle, who was kind of a hot commodity, on the show. And Michelle Beadle gets on one morning, whatever scandal was going on in the NFL or whatever incident had happened, and she says, that's why I stopped watching football months ago. I don't even watch football. Because she's an NBA person. And it was like, I remember watching going, did she literally just say, she's hosting a national morning show and just said, I don't watch football. Football's out. That sports, I'm done with that. Not the NHL.
And let me check, ESPN ABC invests, $4 billion
a year? Not the WNBA. Not the WNBA. She was done with that show. It was over the minute that came out of her mouth, and she's never really recovered. But, I mean, that's just nonsense. And I would imagine if FS1, they're like, you don't have enough problems, Joy. Like, you had to do a tirade about a guy that's actually not on someone's team. That is rough stuff. And I say it with all humility that I have screwed up on the air.
Oh, we all have, yeah.
But that's another level. All right, a lot of stuff going on in college football. I know you got some thoughts on all the SEC. That's what's great about having you here and Rusty here, obviously, as you're closer to it than anyone. So without further ado, let's do the tailgate.
SEC spring meetings wrapping up down in Sandestin, Florida, Miramar Beach. So, of course, all of the big wigs across the conference are going to jump on Feinbaum, do interviews, and talk with local and regional and national media to promote the good of the SEC moving forward.
Yeah, you know why we're partnered with ESPN? Because they can go live down there and give us unbelievable coverage in the month of May when baseball is in like their 52nd game, when Oklahoma City and Minnesota are not exactly compelling the national audience with the NBA. And other than the NFL, college football is king. And they're sitting back saying, the SEC, bring it on. Let's just, you know, ESPN and company broadcasting live.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was fascinating to watch kind of these coaches and athletic directors discuss and debate where the game of college football is at. Obviously, the big house settlement, which should allow schools to directly pay student athletes, is supposed to be signed into action later on this summer. Another big talking point was, will the SEC move to a 9-game conference schedule? Something that's been hotly debated over the past couple of seasons. What about auto bids in the college football playoff? Would that hurt the SEC's chances of getting more teams into an expanded playoffs? And another one that came out yesterday that I found pretty fascinating, we'll touch on this in a bit, could the SEC and the Big Ten, the two conferences that are really dominating college football in the moment, could they start to match up against one another in the regular season? But going back to, Stake, the discussion of should the SEC move to a 9-game schedule, add one more conference game throughout the season as the college football playoff is expected to expand, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said, I don't really know if that's in the best interest of our teams.
It's clear that not losing becomes in many ways more important than beating the University of Georgia, which two of our teams were left out did. Nobody had that kind of quality win.
It's true that not losing is more important than quality wins, and I would have to say I agree with Greg Sankey, and I can guarantee you all 16 SEC head coaches agree with him too.
Yeah, listen, I understand the 9-game, why the coaches should back off, why that's not advantageous. I'm just going to say this about Greg Sankey. And being around the block even longer than you and a lot of folks, I've been around a lot of CEO types, head coach, general managers, titans of industries. There's two ways to go about your business. And constantly demeaning and being as demonstrative, like you're the king of the world, Greg Sankey. We know you got the best of everything, commissioner of the SEC. I mean, the condescension, though, towards the ACC and the Big 12 and even the Big 10, which has no right to be condescending, the Big 10, they got a bigger contract. They got the last two national titles. Yeah. Like, he just paints himself to be a villain. It's really easy to poke holes in your theory about last year when you talk about Alabama and Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss lost to the Gators when they were beating nobody. They lost to LSU, had a mediocre season, and they lost to Kentucky. So if you're a national power, I know you beat Georgia, but Georgia, listen, was going to lose games in the middle of that gauntlet as well. And if you're Alabama fans, I don't hear Mike Johnson make a peep. You know why?
Because they lost to Vanderbilt and they got boat raced by Oklahoma.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And you know what? A real sports fan at their core understands if you root for programs like Alabama, there's a standard set, and losing to the Sooners and the Commodores is not that standard.
Here's what I would say about Greg Sankey. You know, of course, he does not care about the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12. He is paid to make sure that the SEC is highly compensated as a conference, and he is paid to make sure that the majority of his teams get chances to compete for national championships. But I'll say this. If you are the King Kong commissioner, as you kind of paint yourself to be now, all I hear about are complaints about where the game of college football is at. All I hear about is, hey, we need to fix this. We need to fix that. We're in a state of flux. How about creating some solutions? If you're the big dog, give us some solutions. Make something happen. And I would have to say, from the outside looking in, I got to think Greg Sankey's got the juice to maybe get something like that done, but I haven't seen it yet.
What do you think about moving away from the 4-4-2-2-1 format so that you don't just automatically give the SEC four teams and the Big Ten and you just say, what is it, 4-11? 5-11, 11 at large, five conference champions, one of them being from the group of five, right?
Yeah, you know, I think Kirby, we don't have the cup, but Kirby had a really good retort to one of those statements around maybe quote-unquote SEC bias. He's like, why is SEC quote-unquote bias only in football going to the NCAA tournament this past year in basketball? Well, how many teams? 14 teams, 12 teams out of the SEC made it to the tournament.
What about baseball? What just happened in baseball?
So what he's saying—
How many did they get in baseball, by the way, in the regionals, super regionals, which are coming
up?
No, more than that.
More than that?
I think it was 12.
But what he is saying is this. If you go to the 5-11, and there are 11 at-large bids, get ready for the SEC to dominate 11 of those spaces.
I don't think it's
going to
be any different if you go 4-4, 2-2-1, or if you go to the 5-11, because SEC is rightfully so going to dominate.
Well, when discussing the 8-game conference schedule versus the 9-game conference schedule, I thought Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian had a really good point as to why maybe the SEC should probably just stick with an 8-game conference schedule.
This idea of somebody's going to go 16-0 in college football, man, put a statue up somewhere of that team, because I just don't know if that's going to happen again.
So, if that's never going to happen again, then why would you want to make your schedule harder? Georgia Athletic Director Josh Brooks was on Feinbaum yesterday. He's like, you really have to think about, when you're creating these schedules, what's the give and what's the take? We're going to be ready at the end of the season, regardless if we play Marshall.
What's the risk of now adding a game against Oklahoma, Mississippi State, LSU, insert, versus what's the reward? There's not a block. I mean, I guess if you're having a mediocre season, one of those wins could vault you into the field of 16.
Yeah, and that would be like a 14, 15, 16 type decision, not a top four type decision. And I think Georgia is actually in a really good position to opine on this, because look at their schedule over the last couple of years. They play some of the toughest non-conference games in the country, and oftentimes they've been that fifth team outside of the top
four. What do you think having a schedule Georgia Tech every year does when you play an 8 overtime game against a team that absolutely fighting you tooth and nail? Brent Key is inspired by the George O'Leary era, saying, we're not going to take a backseat to Georgia. We're going to beat Georgia outright. I've been there when we could beat him, and we're going to have a chance to do that. And now they're fighting for their lives. Georgia's in the middle of a season, or the end of a season, where they've had a gauntlet of games against the Gators, the Volunteers, against Ole Miss, Alabama, Texas.
Holy cow.
Right? And now in the back end of their year, right before the SEC title game, the biggest game of the year at Georgia Tech, who, by the way, now as a top 20 recruiting class, great quarterback play, wants to be in the field of 16. That's our final game. Then we're going to go to the SEC title game. Then if we don't win that, we're going to a playoff game. We win that playoff game, we're going to another playoff game.
Why?
I mean,
why would you make
much.
It harder? I mean, Georgia Tech played Georgia so hard this year, they made rings for the entire team. That was something else. I'm sure you saw that yesterday, Georgia Tech going viral in not the best way. They made rings for their 2024 season, in which, of course, they lost to Georgia. They lost the Birmingham Bowl, and then they beat 2-10 Florida State, and they beat Miami. So they got rings.
Yeah, that was not that gave Georgia an open game to just right. I mean, just handed it to them on a platter. But I do enjoy the, maybe just because we do this for a living, the media frenzy of the SEC. Greg Sankey, we've interviewed him many times. He is who he is. You don't have to be pompous and condescending. You can be the king. You can be the CEO. We sat with Ed Bastian here a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
Ed Bastian is the king of the world. CBS Sunday Morning, you didn't see it, did an entire 7 minutes on Delta Airlines.
Oh, I got to see that. I have not seen that
yet. The 100-year anniversary of Delta on CBS Sunday Morning. Not about American, United, whatever, about Delta Airlines, a 7-8 minute commercial, and CBS News, not in the business of propping up big capitalist,
right,
you know, whatever. They're not in the business of propping up big companies. Why? Because Ed Bastian has a humility to him, and it can say, hold my beer, look where we are, and look where everybody else is, but you don't have to be. Greg Sankey, watch some Ed Bastian from Delta. And tone it down a notch. Tone it down. Humility. It's an amazing quality. Try to show
a
little
bit. Or become the commissioner of college football and be the true villain.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Roger Goodell type.
Well, that's how you're talking, for sure.
Exactly.
Hey, we'll ask what's the hardest thing in all of sports to do when we come back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hour number two of the Steakhouse. Thanks for being with us. Braves got an afternoon game, 105. What do we got? Smith Schaarver versus
Christopher Sanchez for the Phillies. And then 6:45 tonight, Chris Sale on the mound against Zach Wheeler.
Boy, they got to get a dub pretty badly. Game one, Braves are significant underdogs in that one. It would let you know the number on the nightcap. Couple of other quick things. I don't pretend we're a hockey town because we're not. However, the Florida Panthers, my jealousy factor of these southern cities that get this much hockey.
Have you been to that arena in Fort Lauderdale?
I don't think so.
In like Sunrise area?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, just imagine, you know, take Gas South Arena in Duluth, right off 85.
They're
2 years ago, I was down there with my wife's cousin. We're at his house in Fort Lauderdale at 6:45. He's like, "You want to go to the hockey game?" I'm like, "Yeah, puck drops in 15 minutes." He's like, "Let's go." We drive, we park, we're in our seats within 20 minutes, had a great time, back home, place was packed.
They are building a ridiculous dynasty with the Florida Panthers.
Awesome.
They're back in the finals again.
Have you seen their facility that they train at? It's like world-class, state-of-the-art.
Well,
awesome.
That's what they are. They're one of the great hockey programs. They're in, and Oklahoma City, get ready, dude. They're loaded for bear, the GM. They still got like 8 first-rounders coming as well.
Oh, my
goodness. Team, dude, that team is...
Shea Gilgis and Chet Holmgren looks great.
Top to bottom,
yeah,
the construction of that team is unbelievable. Anyways, all that being said, all that sports stuff, this is a sports conversation also, but our old friend Eddie Gonzalez, who I've been buddies with since he was running the Greater Atlanta Open when it was finally over? What was it called?
You call it whatever you want.
Well, what was
it? It was
name
the Atlanta Open, and it was the BB&T Atlanta Open, and became Truist after that merger.
So Eddie had been on our show countless times when we were promoting the tennis tournament, a longtime phenomenal tennis advocate, played college tennis at NC State, correct?
Go Wolfpack.
Yeah. And that tournament went away, and you kind of said, I'm going to live my life. Like, following you on Facebook is just like, that's my goal, right? You're in Maine, and then you're in San Francisco, and then you're in Florida, and you're always playing tennis and golf. So retirement has been good to you, right?
You know, when I stepped away from running the tournament, I said, you know what? Now my priorities are spending time with family and friends, doing the things that I love. Love to play tennis, love to play golf, love to have a good adult beverage.
Yep.
And I've been blessed to have friends and family all over the world. And you know, I can do it now. I got my health, and, you know, so it's been fun. I was just thinking this time last year, I was actually at the French Open.
Wow.
And I got to see Nadal's last match against Zverev last year.
Wow.
And so watching the French brought back great memories of being in Paris this time last year.
I got a quick question about your time at the Atlanta Open. Obviously, last year was the final iteration of the tournament. I'm a big golf guy, so I understand how important it is to have great fields in golf, attract the best players. What is that process like to recruit that top talent to have them come be a part of the Atlanta Open?
Well, Drew, part of our strategy was to create that loyalty from those young Americans.
Yeah.
And when I look back, I'm very proud that Taylor Fritz, first wild card Atlanta, Tommy Paul, who just won a 5-setter yesterday, Ben Shelton, who is now in the third round, Francis Tiafoe. You give them the first taste of pro tennis in Atlanta, and it builds loyalty for them, and they want to keep coming back. And
what's the name of the series on Netflix,
Match Point, right? Isn't that what it was?
Well, it had a 2-year run,
yeah,
and then it didn't. Yeah, I think it was.
Well, my point is, all the content around that series was the guys you just mentioned.
Right.
Like, they are literally the stars. Those American players, if you watch that series with Match Point.
Think so.
Yeah. But anyway, to your point about, you know, you got them before they were really at the highest level, which is where they are today.
Yeah, and we were never going to get Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, just the way the calendar falls. But all those Americans, you know, there's just so few tournaments left in the United States that they love playing in Atlanta. Atlanta's, as we all know, we live here. There's courts in every neighborhood, and so it's a great tennis community. And Atlantic Station was a great venue.
Yeah.
The players stayed.
They stayed right at that hotel. Yeah,
go to the restaurants, and everything was right there. Where normally any tournament in the world, you got to drive 15 minutes to go to your practice courts, or 20 minutes to get something to eat or the venue. These guys were walking back to their hotel after matches and hanging out at Yard House and Atlantic Grill.
Breakpoint, by the way, is the name of the series.
Breakpoint.
Yeah, on Netflix. What was the biggest frustration that you could never say when you're coming on the air? Is it having to battle to stay relevant? Is not getting the help you need from, you know, American Tennis Associations or the governing bodies? Like, what are those fires that you're constantly putting out when you are literally, you know, the head of the whole bringing this tournament here for 12 months, a job for a 2-week stint, right?
Well, I would say a big pro and con was, you know, we turned that empty parking lot into a tennis tournament,
yeah,
just like Cirque du Soleil that rolls in or other. And so a lot of our time was spent on building that
logistics
venue. So often I felt like I was a superintendent on a job site.
Yep.
That was very rewarding because we built such a beautiful temporary stadium. And when you're in it, you never knew. But if I would have had a permanent venue, then you can spend more time on other things. And so,
it's almost like building a mini battery but having to take it down every year.
Right.
It kind of surprises me as my wife has gotten more into tennis and understanding what Alta is and what T2 is and USTA, that Atlanta doesn't have a premier permanent tennis structure. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, you know, for the Olympics, it was Stone Mountain Park for the tennis venue. And when you had Agassi playing, you know, in the Olympics, people are going to come. But Stone Mountain Park was a tough venue, and unfortunately it didn't survive. It's not even a tennis center now. So, I mean, look, we have some nice tennis centers in town, but to be able to accommodate a professional tennis tournament, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, it's just not realistic.
You don't need Flushing Meadows, but you'd figure with our city and how it's grown so much that might have happened by
the now. Norcross Lifetime just hosted the Pickleball Nationals, correct?
Yes.
Not as big a sport, much easier to navigate something like that, right?
There's more players in that, participants, than there are spectators. When we're talking about 3,500 to 4,000 people coming to Atlantic Station, at least we had the parking and the logistics there. Trying to get in and out of Peachtree Corners there at the Lifetime,
not realistic.
It's a little tougher. I mean, you could do it, but it's just challenges.
Tennis players, handlers, tougher to deal with than the players themselves. Like, what's the big... The reputation for tennis as a bougie sport, as, you know, similar to golf, right? How do you make players more relatable? How do you grow star power? How much of that do you have to deal with running the event?
You know, not much.
Yeah.
I would say that for the most part, there's mutual respect from the players for our staff here, and they appreciated the efforts we made to make it easy for them here. I mean, Nick Kyrgios, the bad boy of tennis, I will say that we're all guilty of making impressions of people, seeing them in between the lines of their sport. And people make an impression of Nick Kyrgios seeing how he is inside the lines. But I get a chance to really see him outside the lines. The guy's got a heart of gold. If I asked him to go to a BB&T Truist cocktail reception, he'd rather go to the dentist. But when I ask him to go do a clinic for special needs kids or for the YMCA summer camp kids that are there, or high school day, first one to say,
"That's awesome.
Count me in, mate." And so just, I got to see a lot of these guys behind the scenes. And, of course, you know, John Isner won the tournament 6 times, been the greatest American over the last 15 years. He is a great tennis player, but even greater human being.
Yeah.
I mean, what he did and does to represent our sport was
what's the health of American tennis these days? For all these fans of Alta and all these different levels and a tennis town through and through, what's the health of American tennis in general and some of these American tournaments?
You know, you use the term bougie for tennis. Respectfully disagree, just because I think tennis now in the public parks is so accessible. And in Atlanta, so many neighborhoods have courts.
Yeah.
But the state of American tennis is strong right now. I mean, Coco Gauff is, if she's not the favorite, she's one of the top three to win the women's, and Jessica Pegula's right there, and there's a couple other young females. And then, as I said, you got Tommy Paul, who just got to the third round. You got Ben Shelton in the third round. You got Seb Korda, Tiafoe. I mean, these, just a couple years ago, we were saying, where is American tennis?
Right.
Nobody's even getting out of the first round. And now these guys have legit to go deep. I don't think anybody's going to – I don't think any Americans can beat Alcaraz in center. I think they're 1 and 1A. But just behind those two guys, I think we're right there.
Is that because the American Tennis Federation done a better job of – I mean, what is – because you heard the McEnroe brothers talk for years about why we're not better. We need to do this. We need to do that. What did they need to do to get us to a higher level?
Well, I wouldn't put it on the governing body. I think it's really about any sport. When you get good athletes, you get good athletes, then that sport
becomes easier for them.
Yeah.
It's almost like lacrosse in Atlanta that's now become a juggernaut. And I had said it for years. If you take some of these kids that play football that are the athletes that have the hand eye, the power,
like, no doubt.
Nobody wants to see a 6'3 kid who's 215 with a lacrosse ball in their hands running down the right sideline.
Barreling down the field. Yeah.
I mean, and it was only a matter of time before once we convert, because we have the athletes, right?
Yeah.
You have the athletes in Atlanta, and now you're seeing it because they're converting to lacrosse, not baseball as much sometimes, right? And you see how dominant we can be. And you transfer some of those kids to play football. So to your point about athletes, you get the right athletes with tennis
Tiafoe's
racket.
Tiafoe's an athlete. Tommy Paul is an athlete. Korda, I mean, and your listeners may not know who these people
who they are yet,
but if they spend any time watching the French Open, and the French Open is the worst surface for Americans because it's the red clay that we don't have much exposure on in the U.S. But when you get to the hard court season and the grass, when it's a faster surface, these guys, one of them could win a major. And I didn't mention Taylor Fritz, who's 4 in the world, but he lost first round to a good European clay court player. But he got to the finals of the U.S. Open last year.
I know next segment we're going to talk about the hardest things to do in sports, but I've got such a respect for pro tennis players along with pro golfers because I think those are maybe the two toughest sports to make it as a professional. There's so much international talent, international competition.
Yes.
These are athletes that are coming out of their own pocket to fund their careers. I mean, to make it,
meaning make a living, is
extremely hard to do.
I've said this for years. The Williams sisters is the most incredible sports story of all time. They're out of Watts and they're two best players in the world. They play in Sweden. They play in Japan. They play in France.
Yeah,
they
got to go all over, man.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like the NBA, now the NBA has gotten to be more international. But those two young ladies.
You're competing against Russians from towns that you can't even pronounce.
Well, we're gonna talk about it, but I've always said the hardest thing to do in sports, in my opinion, is return 130-mile-an-hour serve, and we'll get into that.
All right, so he's on a mission to find out the hardest thing in all of sports. How far along are you? How many have you done so far?
I've done 5, 6, 7.
All right.
Okay.
So, we're halfway through. We'll talk to Eddie Gonzalez. Also, what's it like when your son's playing double-A baseball and grinding his way for a shot at the bigs? That's another fascinating story. Our buddy Eddie G in the house, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hey, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. My name is Steak. That's Drew. Eddie Gonzalez, who ran the Atlanta Open for so many years. That was hot, though. It would get hot. So you got to admit that. August in Atlanta on that surface, it would get warm. Let's give him the mic. Hit that microphone to the right of you. Hit on there. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, it was hot for sure.
Is that why those guys would get so annoyed at me? I'd go to the Open every year, and I said, Eddie, do you want me to get in the mix here, or am I going to embarrass you? And he said, just do it. Like, he kind of would wink at me, like, we don't want to promote. So I'd sit behind a Frenchman, and I thought I was at one of those Georgia tennis matches, right, when they drink the beer and the
Mannarino couldn't understand it. The French guy, you wore him down.
He went to the
the chair umpire,
and he's like, I think I was there with my daughter. Daddy, they're pointing at you over there. They're pointing. Yeah, it's coming. Oh, and it's like, this is what Eddie told me.
Yeah,
no worries.
6-0, John Isner. He could not be denied.
Don't invite me.
You got half credit for that win.
It's like, be careful what you wish for. Don't invite me to the tennis matches on a Wednesday night with an open bar, and then when you put me out there behind the Frenchman, then think I'm going to behave. I'm not. Yeah, right?
You ever seen a dog stretch before it hunts? You just go.
Hey,
open bar, we're gonna, sports scene, Steak Shapiro.
We're going to get to the toughest thing in sports. However, my bucket list number one right now, having been to almost every sporting event, are night matches at the U.S. Open in Flushing Meadows. Now, again, I'm probably going to have to ask for a cash advance from my bank to attend something like that because I understand the U.S. Open now is just, you know, the cost of that thing. But how much fun are the night matches at Flushing Meadow in terms of a vibe?
You know, like you, I've been blessed to be able to go to a lot of sporting events, Final Four, Super Bowls.
Right.
And I tell people, if you can go to a night match at the U.S. Open, it's New York City.
Yeah.
It's people watching. It's the food. It's
food, it's amazing.
And it's just great tennis.
And no legalized gambling in New York.
Yeah.
So think about those night matches. All those New Yorkers now are on the app betting,
yep,
betting the matches, and they're cocktailing, and they're New Yorkers. And if you want to, you know, if you are one of those precious Europeans that doesn't like crowds, you know, getting on you, yeah, right?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll get the tickets and you cover the dinner in
okay,
the city.
Okay, well,
deal.
I'll give us a top five meals. I think the toughest burger in New York, a place called Port Charles, voted like the number.
Fort Charles.
Tried to go,
and Jackie and I went for our anniversary. And I mean, I even went on the website 28 days prior and I didn't even have a chance.
Right. All right. Why did you start this thing about the toughest thing to do in sports? Eddie Gonzalez is with us. He ran the Atlanta Open for years, and he is just living the life right now, yeah, doing all the things he loves. But as a college athlete, is that part of what played into this?
Yeah, well, you know, having a son, as you said, who played at Georgia Tech, and now he's in AA with the Pirates with the Altoona Curve in Altoona, Pennsylvania,
Central
and Western
PA. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you hear the hardest thing to do in sports is hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. And me being a tennis guy, I always said, well, you know, I think it's trying to return 130-mile-an-hour serve because you got to get it over a net and inside the lines. Where
right,
in 90-mile-an-hour fastball, if you hit it 400 feet, that's good. If you hit it 6 inches and you're fast, you're on first base. And so I said, you know what, let's have some – I'm biased. Let's have some fun with this. So I started it with my son, Tress, when he was home before he went to spring training, and we went into the Tech baseball facility, and he set the cage at 90-plus miles an hour, and I stepped in there, and I'm very proud of the fact that I could actually
make contact. Okay.
I was pretty smart the first time. I squared to bunt just to see it, but it's dangerous because looking back, I didn't wear a helmet, and that ball could have popped back up and popped
right
me, but I made contact, and then we went over into the indoor football facility because that's right next door to the baseball, and I tried a 30-yard field goal.
Okay.
I said, you know what? You got these kickers who don't get a lot of love trying to make a game-winning field goal with 80,000 people in the stands, and if you're on the road, they're all pulling against you.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to myself, I can make 2 out of 3 field goals from 30 yards, and nobody
around.
Nobody. I couldn't have been so uncoordinated trying to attempt a field goal, and so that's
kind of worse. You weren't even close.
One first two, it was like a onside kick.
But now think about this, because obviously that's in and of itself, and Pat McAfee's made a great bit on College Game Day about that very feat, making a field goal. Now you have 11 guys rushing you. The ball is coming from the snapper, and you have to kick it in 1.2 seconds or less.
I've never talked
snap to kick.
Not talked much about the – and you haven't elaborated, of course, being an all-pro in college and kicking in the NFL for 5 years, which some folks may or may not know that Drew was in the league for 5 years and kicked at Georgia. I mean, just like a serve – what I don't know. When Bjorn Borg was coming up, what was considered a fast serve?
They were wood rackets in, so if you hit it 110, 115, Roscoe Tanner, you know, 120 back then. And now The average male serve is 120 miles an hour.
Berrios hammers it. Roddick used to hammer it.
But Ben Shelton is 140. Isn't there 140? So now you're talking about, again, you're trying to get your racket on it, number one, put it in play, two, and then win the point.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's why.
So my point, though, is, and I don't mean to cut you up, I want to talk about the modern-day kickers.
Yeah,
and
incredible.
And punters.
Yeah.
So 50-yarders when you were coming up, which is not that long ago, you're in your 30s, right?
I just turned 36,
okay,
yes.
So 50-yard kicks were like, that's the
You got
that,
some leg strength.
Apex.
Yeah, yeah, you
that's
got leg strength, 50-plus.
Not everybody in the league you even think can kick 50s, right? How far has the technology or the expectation for punters and kickers gone?
You know, I sometimes get to be around like high school kickers, good high school kickers, and I think to myself, this kid is better than I was when I was a senior in college. Like the level of talent now has just gotten lower and lower, meaning from an age perspective. You're seeing these kids who are sophomore, junior, seniors in high school, and you're like, man, these kids have some serious talent. But I will say, and I'm sure tennis players can say the exact same thing, think about a guy like John Isner, the longevity of his career, his power, how big he was. I'm sure he saw many players who could serve faster than he could serve, but they weren't well-rounded. They couldn't win the point. They couldn't be consistent. I've seen kickers who can kick 70-yard field goals. I've seen punters who can hammer 65-yard punts time after time, but under the pressure or being consistent, they couldn't do it.
But there are consistent north of 50 now. The NFL
I would say a handful of guys, like almost average, right at or above 50
so
yards per
punt. So is that different training, better athletes in that? Like, why are punters and kickers at an absolute, you know, astronomical level right now in the league? Where does that come from?
One of my, you know, a guy who I think is one of the best punters in the NFL, he just re-signed with the Raiders. His name's A.J. Cole. You know, he's 6'5". Like, he is a true athlete,
right.
And this guy can hammer the football. He's got great technique. He's got an awesome drop. I watch him, I'm like, damn, if I had his talent or if I had his technique, I would have lasted a lot longer.
So, like, the Australian kid from Georgia?
Yeah. Brett Thorson, I mean, he's a stud. He can absolutely
played rugby.
Yeah, but he's also 25. I always give him a hard time too.
So are their legs just stronger? You're working out in a different way.
Yeah,
the way you train.
Yep.
Because now
all of it.
Think
all
about
it.
The way we watch an NFL game now and see a 50-yarder. I mean, and you we
it's
used
routine.
To
it's routine now. You're thinking,
and if you can't do it consistently, you don't have a job.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just why the conversation about eras in any sport are such a dangerous conversation, right? Because the athlete from 30 years ago that now has the modern day training and what's understood now about how to excel is completely different, right?
I used to love the and this could probably translate to tennis too. It'd actually be fascinating to hear your thought, but I used to love when JJ Redick and Mad Dog would go at it because Mad Dog would be like Bob Cousy, and JJ Redick would say Giannis would average 100 a game if he played against Bob Cousy.
And what do you think Bob Cousy would be if he was 40 years later and had full training?
Yeah, exactly.
And had the opportunity. I mean, you just can't compare.
You can't compare.
No, that's when Redick said he's playing a bunch of plumbers. Like, my son took that line. So, dude, Bobby's like, we're driving along. He goes, I'm going to give my top 10 NBA players all time, Daddy. I was like, okay, let's go.
Like LeBron, Kobe, Michael Jordan.
So he went LeBron 1, Michael 2, and I go, yeah, I think Michael 1. Well, and then he literally, Bobby had, he goes to me, Daddy, Michael was playing plumbers. He was playing electricians. I go, what are you talking about?
And that's part of why.
Because he heard that.
That's part of why I wanted to put skates on.
Yeah.
And try
all right,
to
so
hit,
what do we have when we come back? We're going to do hockey? What
yeah,
else?
So we did hockey, and I shot NBA 3 with my son guarding me, which is, you know, 35% average in the NBA.
Right.
And then I did 3 balls from 160 yards in golf.
Yep.
How many could I make out of 3 when GIR, green in regulation, is 65%? And I did have a hole-in-one over the weekend.
You made a hole-in-one?
I had a hole-in-one up at Waterfall Club off Lake Barton.
On the famous par 3?
That's number 2. Mine was on number 11.
Wow, good for
so
you.
So Nick Saban was there. But he
13,
was there.
13,000 to 1 odds. 13,000 to 1 odds, a hole-in-one.
I've got 2.
You got 2 all time. And one was this weekend.
You've
never had one?
Drinks on you after the show.
Yep. All right, we'll come back. We'll play some 3 strikes. We'll find out about those recent experiences. Also want to talk about your son played for Danny Hall. What's it like for a dad when your son is right in the heat of it, man, trying to make the major leagues, the show? Because the show, I imagine, looks a lot different on those private planes and everything else than you talked about, Western Pennsylvania. It's Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Steak Shapiro, Drew Butler, Eddie Gonzalez, our buddy, used to run the Greater Atlanta Open. I'm putting our three strikes together. Can you give me a John Foy big game of the night?
Yeah, we got a double
of them, right?
Yeah, yeah. The John Foy big game of the night is, of course, the Braves and the Phillies. So 105 is your first pitch of the first game. It got postponed from yesterday. A.J. Smith-Shawver against Christopher Sanchez. And that leads right into 645. We got a great pitching matchup to finish up this series. Chris Sale on the mound for the Braves against Zach Wheeler for the Phillies. Braves have got to find some offense. They've got to find some consistency. They're three games under 500, 25 and 28. A doubleheader today against the Phillies. Your John Foy big game of the night.
Good stuff. Eddie Gonzalez is here. I'll get you three strikes coming up in a little bit. Tell us more about this toughest thing in sports, some other things you tried as you have your journey to you know, experience as many different sports as possible.
Yeah, so I mentioned doing baseball. I did, you know, the 30-yard field goals. Tried NBA 3, which is, 24 feet. That's a long way away from the basket, and somebody's trying to guard you, and there's a 35% NBA rate, and I'm proud that I made one out of three.
Yeah.
So at least I did that. Then I tried three balls from 160 yards in golf, reading that the green and regulation average on the PGA Tour is about 65%. And, again, I'm hitting these balls without cameras and people, and I made two out of three. I was very proud of that. But the last two have been the most challenging. Through my friends at the Atlanta Vibe, the Women's Pro Volleyball League, they invited me to come out and try to return a spike from one of their female players, Leah Edmond, who is four-time All-American at Kentucky. And thanks to Colleen Craig, the owner, and Teresa Wenzel, used to work at Georgia Tech, now the president, and Don Dixon, a longtime sports executive. I tell you what, that was humbling. When you got a 70-mile-an-hour volleyball coming at you and you got to dig that ball out, was I had no chance. I had no chance. And so a appreciation for volleyball.
The athletes.
And I said, at least go back and serve. Give me a fighting chance. Go back and serve. Because she was having a teammate throw it up at
and
the net.
You.
And
yeah,
me
no.
trying.
No,
and I was hopeless. No shot. So at least when she went back and served, and, you know, I had a fighting chance there, but the one.
Did you get it in the air at all and return a serve?
I could get it. I think I got two up in the air out of probably 8 or 10.
Okay.
So, I mean, not much of a chance. But then people are like, well, you need to try hockey. So a friend of mine, Tim Noonan, is in a hockey over 40 hockey league, and I just did that last week. And I'm not a skater, so I had to put on the skates and the gear and go out there, and the NHL breakaway penalty shot rate is about 33%, and I was worried I was just going to fall, let alone hold a stick and shoot a puck. And the first one, my buddy said, just go for the five hole. That's right between the legs.
Yeah.
And well, I think the goalie knew that that's what I was doing. So that was 0-for-1. And the next one looked like I had a little opening on the left, and somehow the hockey gods were with me, and I scored on the left side. So I was very proud of myself being able to do that. And now I've got I've reached out to my friends at Atlanta United. I want to be a goalie on a penalty kick and try to see if I can stop a
professional soccer
player. And maybe they'll let me try to shoot a shot. And then a different friend of mine is like, well, why don't you race my greyhound? You know, so greyhounds who race, you know, the fastest dogs.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
I got one for you that I just looked up, and there could be some danger to it because I don't care how good of a swimmer you are, you could potentially drown. The 1,500-meter freestyle in the Olympics, if you're on a 25-meter pool, which probably most of your swimming pools are, that's 66 laps. Katie Ledecky did it in 15 minutes and 30 seconds.
Oh my God.
I mean, that is 30 laps on an Olympic-sized pool.
The finest condition athletes.
Forget about it. That's 15 minutes of straight swimming sprinting. As fast as you can.
Yeah, right. That's a all-out
sprint.
You might
drown.
How about just do like 100 meter, right?
Yeah, why don't I'll get halfway through the pool and have somebody that's an Olympic athlete start at the at the other end, and I just got to go half the distance that they've got to go in full distance. But it's been fun, and it's, you know, it's just – it's having an appreciation –
that's really what
it's about. When I was a D1 athlete, had a cup of coffee trying to be a pro tennis player, you know, being the tournament director, I've been around professional athletes. You just have an appreciation for what these other athletes and other sports do, and that's really all I'm trying to do is, you know, have this appreciation.
I'm glad you mentioned the NHL because people don't understand in this town necessarily skating with all that equipment at the speed and the force and the athletes, and also making sure that you don't get your head taken off.
And how small the puck is.
Right. And head on a swivel, 3 minute stretches until, you know, you have the next line come on. I mean, NHL athletes, they got the biggest legs you've ever seen in your life from churning all those years on skates. I covered the Thrashers, I covered the Bruins, and also they're the best guys. Best guys around sports are NHL
for sure.
Players. All right, here's our three strikes. What's the toughest, who are the greatest athletes in all of sports? Who are the greatest athletes in all of sports? A sport you can easily watch for six straight hours. You can sit there. Let me ask you this. You can watch any golf tournament, Drew, on the Golf Channel and not be bored, or you're going to get bored watching.
No, I would not be bored. Locked in.
Locked
in. Mean, today,
no matter what
the Memorial Tournament at Jack's Place.
You can just sit
Village,
there and watch.
I'll have it on all afternoon.
And finally, most delicious fish dish. I was reprimanded by Eddie G over here. I did a food review. I guess it was canoe.
Good fish sandwich.
Yeah, great fish sandwich. And I didn't specify what type of fish was it.
Yeah, was the Catholic, us, you know, representing the Catholic community. We got to know what sort of fish.
Right. Was it haddock? Was it
cod? Was
cod,
it,
right? More often than not, it's cod. More often than not. So who are the greatest athletes in all of sports, a sport you personally can watch for six straight hours, unencumbered, and most delicious fish dish, fried clams in Maine or in Gloucester, my favorite food in the world. Have to be New England clams. You don't get them down here. They have to have the bellies, and I'm a huge fish guy, scallops, lobsters, baked stuffed lobsters pretty close as well. Give us your most delicious fish dish. Give us a sport you could easily watch for 6 hours unencumbered, and who are the best athletes in all of sports? 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Who do you think are the best athletes in all of sports?
There's so many ways you can go.
Again, the term is so it's so broad, right? You know,
having the
greatest athlete.
Yeah, right? I mean, having the privilege to sit courtside at an NBA game. You know, watching guys like LeBron or Giannis, how big they are,
right.
Their athleticism, running up and down the
court
for 48 minutes.
Factor,
I mean,
the strength
jumping
factor.
Out of the gym, agility, and that's incredible.
You
to
got
me.
One that you think of?
Herschel Walker.
So
Herschel Walker, well, there's what he could do in football and then what he did in the Olympics. I mean, he could – and again, you talk about Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player, but then you saw how humbling it was for him to try baseball.
Right.
But Herschel could transition to other – so that's who I think of.
Yeah,
that's
Michael Phelps. I mean, it's ridiculous what he did. That period of time that he dominated, how many Olympic gold medals he won.
When I ask you the question, it's – what athletes are the best in sports? So not, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, okay, not what specific athlete.
No,
what,
he said it. Yeah. Like, he believes in NBA players.
Yeah.
That size, strength, athleticism, cardio,
one of
all
the best
those,
that I've ever seen
hand
in
eye,
person.
Hand-eye.
I played with Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger in Arizona. And I mean, just watching this guy, like, he could throw a football 70 yards. He could kick the ball.
Right.
He could cover the best receivers. I mean, he was just... I always said if Tyrann Mathieu asked me if I could teach him to punt, I would say no because he'd probably be better than me.
Yeah, I mean there are certain when you're a two sport pro athlete. So Danny Ainge was one of those guys. He started third base for the Blue Jays. Frank Cord never played college football, but he was going to full ride to Clemson and being a baseball
Deion
player.
Deion Sanders,
Bo Jackson. I mean, Bo's the all-timer, but you wouldn't say baseball players are the best athletes. You just wouldn't say that.
No.
404-726-0929. We'll take your calls, fill up our phone lines. Tell us about your son playing double-A ball. I played at Tech for Danny Hall, who tough regional coming up for Georgia Tech.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I'm happy for Danny. This is his last year, and they won the ACC, had a great year. I think it's a travesty that they weren't in the top 16. I mean, you win the ACC, you get to the semifinals of the ACC tournament, you don't get to host.
I don't
understand that. So it's so they're going to go to Oxford, Mississippi. Ole Miss had a great year, and look, SEC. I'm not discrediting. SEC's got 13 teams, and they deserve it. The ACC's getting 9. I just think that Tech should have been able to host. I think the difference for Danny's team this year is they have pitching.
Yeah,
when Tress was there, they were one of the top hitting teams 2 years in a row. But the Achilles heel was just the pitching. This year, they had the depth and they had the hitting, and I think they've got a good shot to come out of that Oxford Regional. And Tech was so good for my son. He went to a small high school, Mount Vernon, and then played, you know, the travel ball like some of the other kids did. And then Tech just gave him the opportunity to play at a high level. I mean, his last 2 years in the NCAAs, the first year they go to Vandy, who was one in the country, and they lose to Kumar Rocker and Leiter. So that was where their NCAA season ended. Then his junior year, his last year before he got drafted, they go to Knoxville and lose to Tennessee, who was one in the country. Those experiences were so good for him now at the AA, and he's having a good year. And the key is healthy. When you're in college, you play 55, 60 games. He's now playing 130 games.
Yeah, wow.
So the body really needs to be.
What do people not understand about the grind of AA baseball and just the journey that that's about?
Well, it's everybody's trying to keep moving up. I mean, whether it's the pitcher or the catcher or the infielder or the outfielder, and unfortunately, winning is de-emphasized in minor league baseball, where your whole life you're playing and it's about the end result.
Yeah.
Tech, you win and you just don't sleep at night when you lose. And now it's, all right, you lose a heartbreaker, but they left the closer in too long because they're trying to develop them, or they didn't pinch hit for a guy.
Or you lose a game, but you go 3-for-4 and you realize in the back of your mind, that's really more what this is about. Right? I need to put up numbers.
Yes.
It's about
development. But you have to be selfish.
But then all of a sudden you have to turn it back on when you get that call and you know, you make the show, and all of a sudden managers are hired or fired by the W's and the L's. So that's an interesting dynamic when winning isn't emphasized.
And the travel, how many bus travel is that, and meals and all that?
Well, good thing for all of minor league baseball is you play the same team Tuesday through Sunday. So you're in the same spot instead of in the years past where you'd play 3 games in Binghamton, New York, and have to get on a bus and go to Akron, Ohio.
Yeah.
So that's
probably create some good rivalries too by the end of a weekend for sure.
Eddie, we got offers rolling in. This comes from Scott Davis on X. He said his sister-in-law is former American record holder and Olympian Amanda Weir, and she will race you in a 100 meter swim race. So we need to make
it
happen.
Okay. All right. I'll do it. I'm up for it.
I love it.
Hey, want to remind everybody, 10 o'clock hour is brought to you by, who's it brought to you by, Mr. Bo? Give it to us. It's Sandy's best friends in the world.
Wise Guy Pro Wash, Atlanta's number one rated pressure washing company.
Thank you, buddy.
I do have to say also, a little chime for our show here, All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors will be at my house today at 2 p.m. So,
Dan Watkins and company, they do a fabulous job. All right, let's do some three strikes. Mason in Barnesville. Mason, who are the greatest athletes in sports?
It's got to be the NFL, man. I don't think nobody else.
What position? What position? Because an offensive lineman is
punters.
A punter, right.
Inside linebackers.
Yep. A sport you could watch for 6 hours straight.
Anything golf related. I don't care if it's YouTube or PGA or Live.
Most delicious fish dish.
So I'm a big fan of medium rare tuna. I don't care who makes it, where it's at. As long as it's cooked to the right temperature, that's what I like.
Hey, Wendy in Lawrenceville, the greatest athlete in all of sports. Who are they?
I think boxers.
Boxers, okay.
Yeah.
Try doing one round in terms of cardio.
Yeah, UFC's up there as well.
A sport you could easily watch for 6 straight hours.
Oh, golf all day.
The most delicious fish dish.
Salmon.
And finally, Steven Woodstock. Who are the greatest athletes in all of sports?
Yeah, I got to say hockey players. I don't think people realize the sheer weight of a hockey puck. On the ice. Hockey pucks are heavy, and those guys are animals.
Our sport you could watch for 6 straight hours.
Football. Any day, any time.
And most delicious fish dish.
Mistake. Yeah, I'm from the north. Belly clams with the belly on them.
You got those fried clams with the bellies on them? What are we talking about here? Come on. It's got to be fried clams. Stop it. Hey, Eddie, always great to see you.
Thanks for having me. Great to spend time with you guys.
All
appreciate
it. That was fun, Eddie. Thanks,
you look
man.
Great. Congrats to you, Drew. Have a great weekend.
Yes, sir. Happy birthday to my wife tomorrow.
Are you here next Monday?
Yeah, we're back in the fold. Are you here next Monday?
You damn right I am.
Amen.
Hey, thanks for making the steakhouse part of your day. Bye.